Chapter 9. Airport Stories. I'm at an airport on my first trip alone with Tila. Checking in at the United Terminal in Los Angeles for a flight to San Francisco, I ask the clerk to confirm they have the bulkhead seat I have reserved to allow room for Tila to lie on the floor. "I can't let you have that seat," the clerk says to me. "It's in our emergency exit row. Passengers sitting there have to be able to read and follow directions and help other passengers in an emergency." "But I reserved it," I tell her. "I'm changing you to a different seat," she says. Standing opposite her across the counter, I'm thinking that I can follow directions, though I know I cannot read small print. Perhaps someone can read the print to me in advance. I know I can help other people. "I reserve the bulkhead because I'm traveling with a guide dog," I say to the clerk, pointing to Tila. "She needs room to lie down." "We can't seat you in that row," the clerk says again, and then begins to read to me from a formal statement about passengers in exit rows needing to have the ability to follow directions and assist others in the event of an unforeseen disembarkment. I now begin to feel self-righteously angry. I'm blind, not dumb. I don't want to be denied any of my rights. I don't want to be treated as less than I am. I hate that people are always thinking that blind people cannot do things. A cool-headed blind woman would be excellent at helping people out of the plane, I think, conjuring an image of a very capable blind woman opening the door and assisting others out, though I doubted that I would be that cool-headed in the circumstance. But Tila might be a help. I imagined her marching forward, leading people to safety from the downed plane. "You can't deny me my seat," I say aloud to the clerk. "It's discriminatory." She looks at me blankly, shakes her head, then begins typing on her computer keyboard, seeming flustered. I am surprised that I have used the word discriminatory. It just tumbled forth as if on its own. So I repeat it. From the other side of the counter, the clerk finally hands me my boarding pass, assuring me she has changed it back to my original assigned seat in the bulkhead row. Her head was down and she was typing furiously as I walked away. After passing through security, Tila led me toward the gate. When the plane was ready, she bounded down the ramp with me in tow. We stopped at the crack that separates the carpeted walkway from the entrance to the plane, where I always fear catching my feet. I took a big step. Inside, I asked where my seat was and went over to it. As I was about to sit down, a male flight attendant rushed over, reaching out a hand to stop me from sitting. "You can't sit there," he said. "But it's my seat. I confirmed it at check-in. I need the space for the dog. This is the emergency exit row. You have to be able to open the door and help other passengers," he said. "I can do that. I'll give you another seat with plenty of room for the dog." My blood was beginning to boil. I was also beginning to think that I might not, in fact, be capable of helping other people off the plane. But I was going to insist. I looked toward the exit door. "I don't want another seat," I said to the attendant. "I can follow directions. I can help people just like anyone else can. It's discriminatory not to let me have this seat." "Please," he said, "I can give you space for your dog. I assure you there will be plenty of room for your dog. You can have two seats, just farther back." I looked behind me in the empty plane. It was a slow Saturday night. "This plane's going to be nearly empty," the flight attendant noted. "I'll give you a whole row to yourself if you want. You can pick your row." I stood, not moving. He walked off to consult with someone or to call the front desk. Then he returned and stood beside me. "I can't let you have that seat," he said sternly. "We can't have wheelchairs in that row or anything that blocks the aisle. Your dog will block the aisle." I gave up. I let him lead me back to another row where he spread his hands and indicated I could pick my seat. As I sat down, I thought with some relief that at least now it was my dog who would block the aisle, rather than my stupidity. Tila lay at my feet on the floor with plenty of space. The plane was so empty that if there was going to be a crash landing, there would not be many people to get off, and there was no one now sitting in the exit row to assist them. I began thinking about an imminent crash landing, and I could not help but think that perhaps I had forfeited my rights too soon. But at some point, you just give up. When I arrived back at my home airport, I waited at the gate for Hannah. She had promised to meet me there since this was my first trip alone with Tila, and I was worried that the airport corridors would be confusing. The airline had informed me that a disabled person or a child can be met at a gate if the person meeting them goes through security. However, there was no Hannah waiting for me. My cell phone soon rang. "They wouldn't let me meet you," Hannah said. "I'm waiting up in front. I'll watch for you at the elevator." "Why wouldn't they let you come to the gate?" I asked her. "You're supposed to be able to." "They said you gave up your rights to be a disabled person in Los Angeles. There was an argument with a clerk at the check-in counter, and you gave up your disabled status. Since you're not disabled anymore, I can't meet you." I flashed back to the clerk typing into her computer as I left. She must have been writing it all down for the record. Still, hadn't I retrieved my disabled status on board the plane when they changed my seat? It was hard to keep track of this elusive identity. I smiled as I met Hannah outside the elevator. "Next time I'll know," I said. I have found airports to be less hostile than the experiences I face on the streets when people ask me, "Are you training that dog?" They are places primarily where I have to insist on my rights, even if I think I should, for the moment, suspend them. I'll wonder, why not let the airport staff change my seat or touch my dog? But some things seem too important to overlook, those having to do with my personal needs for dignity and space. I was in the San Francisco airport standing in a security line on another of my early trips with Tila. When I got up to the table near the conveyor belt, I held Tila close to me, grasping her leash in one hand. With my other hand, I started taking off my backpack and my belt and emptying my pockets. Then I bent down to take off my boots, Tila's nose right down there with me. I put my boots into the bin on the table above me. When I had asked the security guard if I could go directly to the adjacent area where Tila and I would later be examined, he had said no, I should wait in the line first. Standing there now, I watched my belongings disappear out of sight on the conveyor belt, worried that I would never see them again, not seeing far enough ahead to keep track of them. Someone ushered me toward the metal detector archway. I told Tila to go forward, remembering that at guide dog school, they had told us not to let the security people separate us from our dogs. I should follow Tila through the archway first. The metal parts of her leather harness and her collar would set off the alarm. Then I should tell her to lie down on the other side of the metal detector, step back through it myself, and while extending her leash full length, walk forward again through the archway, hoping not to set off the alarm this time. As instructed, I now left Tila on the other side of the scaffold, stepped back, and went forward again, and when I walked through the detector the final time, the alarm remained silent. Safely on the other side of the archway, I asked the security guard if he would like to inspect Tila's harness. I reached down and lifted it off her so he could check it for drugs or knives or any contraband I might have hidden in it, though I did not want to part with Tila's harness any more than I wanted to part with her. The guard took the harness and carried it toward the X-ray machine. "You can wand it," I offered. And suddenly I recalled my very first airline trip to New Mexico with Tila and Hannah. On our return in the Albuquerque airport, I had reached down too quickly and removed Tila's harness, unclicking it swiftly and expertly, proud of myself for knowing how to do it. Then I had felt a guard's hand reaching toward mine to grab my arm. "You shouldn't have done that," she said. "Now that you have, we're going to have to wand you." She took her phone out of her holster on her belt and called to someone. Another guard then came over. "I'll have to feel around on the dog's body," he said, moving his fingers toward the soft fur of Tila's neck. "Don't touch my dog," I almost barked. "You can wand her, but you can't touch her. That's why I gave you the harness. They didn't touch her in the airport on my way here. They got down on the ground and looked under her." The guard then got down on his hands and knees and stared up at Tila's belly. Tila stood patiently. She was ready to play, I felt, if someone started to touch her. If they handled her, it would distract her from her subsequent work of guiding me in the airport. She would think airports were places to go up to people and ask for petting. I stood waiting. A managerial-level security guard in a suit then came over. "Come with me," he said, motioning, and he spoke in a conciliatory manner. He led me to an area of seats and small tables. "Put your things there," he gestured. "I'll take those." He reached to lift off my backpack. Then he reached to take Tila's leash from me. "You can't take the dog," I said. "Okay," he stepped back. "But we'll need to examine you." He pointed toward the footprints on the floor. "You have no right," I said. "I went through the security line. I didn't set off the alarm. You're putting me through extra steps just because I have a guide dog." "It's because you touched that," he pointed to the harness. "You could have put something up your sleeve. I know you didn't, but we have to go through procedures." He then motioned to a woman guard to join us. She asked me to spread my arms and legs, and then she wanded me. She touched the various areas where there might be a bulge and where my metal rivets in my pants set off the beeper. I took my magnifier out of my pocket and handed it to her so she could wand it, even though it was totally plastic. I took off my boots again. "The dog," the manager said. "You can look under her, but you can't touch her," I said. Only in retrospect do I realize that I have more stealthily guarded Tila's right not to be touched than I have my own. When examined in the Albuquerque airport, I felt embarrassed about making such a fuss, but I still thought it wasn't right for them to put me through the extra scrutiny. I wasn't being treated like everyone else. Perhaps this particular airport was behind the times and they wouldn't always require a second exam. I heard one of the guards tell the manager as he walked me over that this was the first time they had encountered a guide dog, and they'd have to learn how to do it. The odd thing is that since that first time when I was asked to spread my arms and legs, I've become used to the treatment. Now I ask to go over and sit on the side and wait for a security person to come and examine Tila, and not touch her, and then to examine me, allowing the touching. When I tell people not to touch or pet Tila, I say it is because it will distract her from her work, which is true, but it's also because I feel it enables her to walk through the world safely, feeling it is hers, especially when she is on the other end of that leash attached to me. It must be a nice feeling, I think, probably because I myself walk around feeling quite unprotected with my blindness and having it signified so blatantly with Tila and before her with a white cane. People so often reach across into my space with their, "Are you training that dog?" question, and at airports with the desire to examine me doubly to make sure that I am not hiding something. I have an image of myself walking with Tila down the many corridors we have, by now, traversed in airports. She guides me quickly, so we stride by the other passengers walking to their planes. As she leads me, I am always trying to keep my balance and not look foolish in the face of her exuberance, increased now with the excitement of the airport. I am watchful because it is often not clear to me whether Tila will bump me into other passengers as she weaves me through them. She's supposed to leave enough space for both of us to pass people, but sometimes she doesn't calculate for me on her right side. Then I'll bump into someone with my right shoulder. I keep trying to teach her not to bump me into people, but our working together is an imperfect art. She doesn't see people as unyielding obstacles. In airports, too, I am especially aware that I have only one hand free when I am holding her harness. And it is not really free, for at any minute I might have to use it to take up the leash and give Tila guidance. I have to be very careful if I am carrying a cup of coffee or a sandwich so that I don't spill or drop it. I am constantly self-conscious about looking like I can't manage this process with style, about appearing discombobulated to people. This concern follows me as I follow Tila, as I try to move as if I know what I am doing, that I can navigate without tripping or spilling. At the same time, there is the signaling power of doing so, letting others know that I am blind. People do not realize how much work goes into being attached to a guide dog. I try to make it look easy, and it's not that it is so hard, but it is time-consuming and attention-requiring. I am two people all the time. I can't forget Tila, except for sometimes when we are outdoors walking alone, without obstacles or impediments, and I'm looking up into the sky at the big shapes of clouds and taking in the fresh air. But inside places like airports, it is more like a hothouse. There are usually no other dogs, and people notice Tila, and they notice me, at least from the knees down. Fortunately, I can't see them looking at me most of the time. I can't see their eyes or expressions, and I am usually focused on my own navigation, so I am spared the specificity of being watched. But still, I feel it. Hannah tells me that when we travel together, she has noticed that people burst into smiles in the airport when Tila and I walk past them. They're happy to see a dog. That's been reassuring to me. Once, when Tila was leading me through a baggage claim area, she pulled me sideways and would not lead me to the door as I instructed. She was taking me to a small dog in a carrying case. Since then, I think she always looks for other dogs in baggage claim areas. I don't always have a bulkhead seat on the planes, but I try for one. Each time I fly, I find myself insisting that the security people not touch Tila, and each time, they want to. At one point, I decided to tell the security guards that she was a very nervous dog, so it would not be a good idea to touch her. "I don't think she'll bite," I said, seeking to imply the opposite. "We understand." The guard drew her hands back. I have also become used to the conversation that occurs in airports when I am sitting in the examining area with my shoes off, waiting for a security guard to come wand me. I will get the question, "Are you training that dog?" Once, when I had just put on my shoes and was ready to be on my way, a woman security guard spoke up. "You must be training." "I am legally blind," I told her. "You look like you can see fine," she said. "It's not what it looks like from the outside," I tried to explain, pointing to my eyes. "It's how it looks from the inside. But I don't always have that much presence of mind." Not long ago, when Hannah, Tila, and I were traveling cross-country to visit Hannah's family in Pennsylvania, we had to change planes in Atlanta. Before boarding the connecting flight, I needed to find a place for Tila to relieve herself. At the gate, I spoke to an attendant. "Can you call someone to take me to an outdoor area where my dog can relieve?" I asked. "They won't come," he said. "We're understaffed, but I can call a wheelchair for you." "I don't need a wheelchair. I requested a person when I checked in." He thought for a moment. "I'd let you out right here," he offered, motioning to the ramp behind him. "But the last one we let out ran away. We can't do that anymore." I had images of Tila bounding off across the tarmac. "Can you call customer service for me?" I asked. "They won't come here, but you can go there yourself. Or you can just take her out the front door of the airport yourself." He pointed in the direction of a walkway. "Exactly where is customer service?" I asked. "I can't see where you're pointing to."
"Back there, after the overpass."
"Exactly where after the overpass? Is it on the left or the right? Can you give me more specific directions?"
"On the left. After you pass the escalator, turn left to the overpass and it will be on your left."
Hannah, Tila, and I set off. At customer service, we found a long line of people waiting. I wanted to go right up to the desk and tell them that my dog had to pee. But I waited. A roaming customer service representative walked down the line asking what people needed.
"I need someone to take me to an outside area where my dog can relieve herself. Then I need help back so I can have priority through security." The representative went on to the next person. Hannah nudged me soon after that.
"They want you up in front," she said. "They were waving to you, but you didn't see them. Go straight ahead to the desk." At that moment, I was more surprised by the fact that I had not seen the airport attendants waving to me than by the fact that they were waving to a blind person with a guide dog. And I thought, I should have seen them. I tend to forget that I see mostly what is straight ahead, not objects on the peripheries of my vision or in my blind spots. In airports, too, I feel surrounded by increased darkness. At the same time, the glare from the lights and the indistinct activity of people moving around confuses me. I am more nearsighted than usual because I don't wear my glasses, since they correct only to a limited degree, and I don't want people to think I see more than I do. I am very aware of my visual impairments. Still, I am often surprised by my lack of sight, and I feel responsible for it, as if I should have seen those people gesturing to me. I walked up to the desk and explained my situation.
"No one's free to go with you right now," the customer service attendant said. "You can take your dog out the front door yourself."
I began stuttering. It was a big airport. I would have to get on and off a train. "She really needs to pee," I said, pointing to Tila and conveying an anxiousness. "I would hate to get on the plane without taking her out." I looked at the ground and stood very still. In the back of my mind, I knew that Hannah had offered to guide me and Tila to the airport's front door, but I had declined.
I needed to know I could do this myself, that I could ask for help in an airport and be given it, for the next time, I might be traveling alone. Finally, a customer representative appeared. A large man in a uniform, he walked up and offered me his arm. I told him to go ahead, my dog would follow him. So Tila followed the man, I followed her, and Hannah followed me, all of us walking briskly, single file, through the airport. The representative led us down corridors, through a back door, onto a service elevator, and into the basement, then onto a train for several stops, and off, and out into a lobby and to a side door. There, Tila and I stepped out into the warmth of the sunlight. The attendant pointed to a grassy area in a corner. Tila led me over to it, sniffed the grass and the scent of many before her, and peed. I marveled that I was ever expected to get here by myself. The uniformed man led us back inside. He stepped to the front of the security line and spoke to the guards while I stood waiting next to a table. Hannah was somewhere out of my sight. A bin was handed to me. I took off my backpack, my belt, and took out my computer and placed these items in the bin. Then I bent down to start untying my shoes. Suddenly I heard, "Over here!" being called out in my direction by several voices. I looked up and saw blurry motions of white-shirted arms waving to me in the distance. They were on the other side of the metal detector, motioning me over. Tila guided me toward them. Then she stood while the guards gave her a cursory once-over and underlook. The guards told me to walk back and then come forward again through the metal detector, and I was processed through, mercifully quickly. Hannah stood on the other side of the archway, her eye on my belongings. I got Tila ready, and we were off again, following the representative. Then on our own, back down the walkway, on and off the train, onto an elevator, up out of the basement, through corridors, and to the gate. At the gate, I finally caught my breath. Tila had peed, and we were all now safely back, in time for our connecting flight. But it hadn't been pleasant, neither the rushing through the airport through surroundings I couldn't see, nor my sense that I could not find my way alone, nor my need to insist over and over again that I should have assistance. Airports, they're so very public and I'm so very private, and so obvious with Tila. I feel odd being guided by a dog, trying to do it in good form, yet looking like I'm blind. I am unsure of what others see, unsure of what I see myself, doubtful inside of who I am and of what I should be doing all the while as I am doing it, as Tila pulls me forward and I follow her. She weaves me through the other passengers. The world whizzes by me out of focus, and I wonder, am I doing it right? Am I blind enough? Do I need this dog? But if I let go of Tila's harness for even a moment, if I lose her, then she turns back and looks strangely at me as if to say, "Where are you? You're supposed to be on the other end of this." I pick up the harness handle and start again the rolling walk we share, feeling it is worth it. If not for Tila, I would need a cane. People have to know I won't see them, or they will think I am rude when I bump into them or don't give them the right-of-way. I don't want to be hit by something I do not see coming, or trip and fall, or collide with a person or object not in my direct line of sight. I now feel unsafe without a probe or guide in front of me, Tila far preferable to a cane. On our return trip through the Atlanta airport, we had less time than on the outbound flight. I wanted to avoid rushing through the airport to get Tila to a spot where she could relieve herself. We were arriving on a small plane, and I remembered that on our outbound trip, a similar plane had deposited us on the airport tarmac. It was night and dark then, and I had not expected a set of rickety outdoor stairs would be rolled up to the plane. As I stepped down them, I was afraid for my footing. The engine noise outside was loud, and I was worried about Tila's sensitive ears. At the foot of the staircase, I asked the attendant where to go. He raised his left arm and gestured. "Over there," he said. "Do you need me to take you?" "No," I had answered instinctively. I did not want to take him away from his position at the foot of the staircase helping other passengers. "Just give me directions," I said. "You go over to that building," he gestured again. "You sure you don't want me to take you? There are inside stairs." "No," I said. Then I headed off into the dark by myself, the first person off the plane, terrified by the noise overhead, blinded by the brightness of the lights as well as by the darkness. and worried about Tila's sensitive ears. Would she be scared? Would she know where to go? We walked forward. I ducked under a parked plane. Where was the building I had so proudly announced I could find? Finally, I saw an opening to my left. We hurried over. Inside, the staircase leading up looked black. I was convinced I could not climb it and that I shouldn't ever do this again, say no to an offer of assistance at night outdoors in an airport. From that experience, however, I now remembered that when we disembarked in Atlanta, I would exit onto the tarmac. I also remembered that when we arrived before, the gate attendant had suggested that other dogs had peed there. As soon as we landed this time, I climbed down from the plane and asked the attendant standing at the foot of the staircase, "Can you take me to a spot near here where my dog can pee?" "Certainly." He reached and took hold of my arm. I shook free of him. "I'll follow you," I said, touching his arm gently instead and walking beside him, healing Tila at my left. He led us away from the plane for a distance, then stopped, gesturing that I could find a spot. I was on my own from here. The airport tarmac was noisy, though this time it was daylight. I took a few steps forward, ducked under a plane, and followed Tila. Beneath the plane, a pile of leaves and papers blew in the wind. Tila headed for the pile, distracted by it. I worried about the engine noise around us and the fact that she had never peed under a plane before. She sniffed the pile of scraps. I bent down and unhooked her harness and extended her leash to full length so she could circle around me in the routine way that signals that this is the time and place to do her business. The movement stimulates her system. She circled, stopped, sniffed the leaves, circled again, then dutifully squatted and peed. Though that was all, it was the important elimination that I had worried about for the long plane ride home. I brought her back close to me by shortening her leash, slipped her harness over her head and her back, and hooked it up under her chest. Then I almost had to drag her away from the interesting pile of dirt. As we stepped out from under the plane, I squinted into the sunlight, looking for the attendant. Suddenly, he was in front of me with several people from the plane standing behind him. "We were rooting for her," he said. "What kind of dog is that?" I had forgotten about my privacy, that I probably didn't have any, though I had not really forgotten. While under the plane, I kept worrying that someone would come out of nowhere and tell me I couldn't be there. "She's half golden retriever, half yellow lab," I said to the attendant, and this time I asked him, "Can you walk me over to the building and take me inside?" I am often unsure of what I need. When I first had a white cane and was not regularly using it, a blind friend said to me one day when I was about to leave for the airport, "Take your cane out as soon as you get there. You'll get more help that way." I had not before thought that I needed more help, or I was leaving it to chance to a greater degree. Maybe I would not need the help. Maybe I would. How would I know? I didn't want to be limited. The help makes me conspicuous, but it is also reassuring. I move through airports as I do through the rest of my life, terribly self-conscious, seeking reassurance and protection for a precarious sense of myself, seeking balance, relying on guidance from others, questioning my needs for assistance even as I assert them, questioning my needs for a dog at the same time as I hold tightly to the harness handle. Never having had much physical assistance before, or never having acknowledged fully enough the assistance I've had, I find it hard to accept my need for it. My self-doubts trouble me far too often. I hope one day to rid myself of them so that I can enjoy my experiences more fully. When I first began to lose my eyesight, I knew that having impaired vision would be a difficulty. What I did not know was that this experience would turn me inward to such a great extent and simultaneously make me sensitive to public gaze and judgment. The sense of being watched externally causes within me a parallel inner watchfulness and self-judgment. Yet I hope that my instinct for my own movement forward will, in the end, be freeing, like a bursting from a shell, like a walk one early morning when things are still and the air is crisp, and I am with my dog, her tail high, her nose forward, her fur glowing golden. I am glad to be out with her, taking in the air, not in an airport, not being looked at and commented upon by people, but for the moment, caught up in an appreciation for the day, taking pleasure in our movement.